And he kind of breezed over as my uncle was going to be my sponsor. And we got up to the top and the priest says, and what name does this child take? And he didn't know. And he says, well, what's the name? And I said, Malachi. And he went, really? And the priest just, it's such a weird name for a kid to choose. It was just this look. And I was like, yes, Malachi. Fucking tell him. And he's like, Malachi. And he's like, oh, well, you know.
I'm Anne McNamee-Keels, and this is Lapsed, a podcast about growing up Catholic. We have a great episode for you this week. It is very fitting for the season we're in, which is St. Patrick's Day, right? Is it a season for you? I know here in Chicago, it feels like an entire season. Last weekend, there was a St. Patrick's Day parade nearby, and then there's going to be another one, and then actual St. Patrick's Day. So hope you're enjoying if you celebrate. We have a really great guest for you today, comedian Patty Raff. If you are listening from Ireland, specifically Northern Ireland, or even anywhere in the UK, you might be familiar with him. And if you are listening from the US or elsewhere, you might not be familiar, but you definitely should go check him out immediately. Patty Raff, after just 5 years in comedy, Patty Raff has a record-breaking 6 solo sellout nights at Belfast's SSE Arena under his belt, amassed millions of likes and views on his social media sketches, provided tour support for comedy legend Mickey Flanagan in the UK and Ireland, and he's also written and created 2 award-winning seasons of BBC NI's comedy sketch series, The Patty Raff Show, making him one of Northern Ireland's fastest-rising comedians. We are really thrilled to have him with us. What you will hear next is a conversation that I had with Patty recently. Unfortunately, Steph was traveling for work, so it's just me and Patty in the conversation. But it was lovely. It was obviously so, so funny. Also, we really delve into some serious stuff as well. Always great talking to someone who grew up Catholic in a very different context. Just really great conversation. It's a long conversation, but I decided not, I mean, there was very little I felt like I could cut. So, you know, get cozy and listen in. So please enjoy this conversation with comedian Patty Raff. Patty Raff, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So to let listeners know how this came to be is essentially I manage most of our social media and I kept sharing your content and I didn't even notice the pattern that it was you over and over again. The algorithm is a impressive thing.
Yeah.
And it kept popping up like, oh, you're going to like this Catholic stuff. And I did. And I kept sharing it.
It's like the Holy Spirit. It just seeks you out. I sound religious. I'm so not anymore. That was it. Yeah. So I saw that. I think the one I saw was, when you get notified that a certain, you know, video has been shared or whatever.
Yeah.
And it was the one of the girls dancing up to the altar, the Irish dancing. I saw that, and then I went in and I saw a couple of other memes that I put out over the sort of last few years, and then that's when I realized like these guys are cut from the same cloth.
Well, the Irish dance one in particular got me. We're in this, it's very prescient for this time of year. Mm-hmm. I live in a suburb of Chicago right now that is very pretty diverse in lots of different ways, mm-hmm. including religiously. Mm-hmm. Have you been to Chicago?
No, I've only ever been to New York.
Okay.
Sort of West Coast did a wee bit of a thing there, and then Hawaii. So I haven't been to Chicago.
I mean, those are good spots to be in if you come in the US. Those are winners.
I've a peak too soon now. Will Chicago not live up to it?
Yeah, Hawaii's a whole other level. No, Chicago's good. Come in the summer, though. Don't. Winter in Chicago will turn you off of it forever. So come in the summer if you come. You'd do great here. Folks would love you.
One of my biggest memes ever was a meme about fish waking up in the Chicago River on St. Patrick's Day. And it was like a green, you know, it's a particular meme, I put green over it, and it's like, as every year we see that, and like, as an Irish person called Paddy, you know, like, part of me goes, oh, that's so tacky, and other parts like, I want to go there, like, you know, it looks like it's really happening.
Well, okay, so that's the thing is, I grew up knowing about the Chicago River, but that was like, I grew up in such a Irish American enclave of Chicago that we like didn't leave very often. So we didn't even go to the downtown parade. We had our own parade. There's a South Side parade that a couple years ago got shut down because the North Side bars were busing Northsiders to the South Side parade to be like, see the South Side Irish in their natural habitat. But then people were like peeing on people's lawns and stuff, and it just got like way out of control. So then they had to shut it down for several years, and now they're like slowly amping it back up. Mm-hmm. I was the Brightwood Irish princess when I was 5 years old.
Oh, I'm in the presence of royalty. I didn't realize this is.
Yeah, I had no idea. I lost the first year to Megan Hinks, whose hair was redder and curlier than mine. But all that to say. Yeah, so I grew up in this weird little enclave that still exists in Chicago, where people very much identify as Irish and Catholic, but it is also like Irish and Catholic from like, it's from like 1922 or something, because like everybody's great grandparents immigrated here.
Yeah, yeah.
And so everyone's like wearing their clotta rings and wearing their green and drinking their Guinness, but like most of them have never been to Ireland.
Yeah, yeah.
Like if I were to go back to grad school, I would just like do a study of my my people. Oh, but I'm living in this place now. So St. Patrick's Day is coming around, and someone, a parent, I'm on the PT, the parent teacher organization here, and someone was like, maybe we should have Irish dancers. Like, these kids have never been exposed to Irish dance. Like, for some reason, teachers go heavy on leprechauns here around St. Patrick's Day. Like, they convince the kids that leprechauns have gotten into the classroom.
Oh, yeah.
So, is that like, have you heard of this?
Well, yeah, the funny thing, so obviously being from Ireland and then seeing, you know, sort of how the rest of the world views Irish people, it's always particularly funny. People like love laying into the trope of the Irish American, you know, when you're from here and you hear Irish Americans explaining how my granny's neighbor's dogs, you know, whatever, was an Irish wolfhound. So that makes me, you know, so we all take the piss out of that. But I think like the leprechaun thing, I think is very funny because and I kind of found out why Americans in particular really believe, not all of them, but a lot of them believe in leprechauns. And it's from a movie. I don't know if you ever remember the film, Darby O'Gill and the Little People. Have you ever seen that?
Oh, okay. That sounds familiar, but I have not seen it. No.
Okay. You have to watch it. I mean, like, it is just so good. It's a it's from the, you know, sort of the old Disney kind of stable.
Okay.
And basically Darby O'Gill and the Little People, really big budget. And it was, and it basically, it did so good at that sort of 40s, maybe 50s, forced perspective where they would have little people. Oh. And they looked really, even today, it sort of still stands up to the test of time. But it genuinely, so what Disney did was they deliberately marketed it as in, this is the first time captured on film actual Irish leprechauns. So it was a bit of a marketing thing. And the Americans actually believed it at the time that where apparently like a whole generation were hoodwinked into the fact that, no, this is real. So the leprechaun thing's a lot stronger in America than elsewhere. Whereas, you know, over here, it's like,
I feel like, I don't know. I just didn't realize what a big part of my children's lives leprechauns would be every March, like at school, at their public school. I don't know. So this has been a thing where they were like, the children should be exposed to Irish dance and bagpipes. And I was like, you don't know how bagpipe and Irish dance forward my life was. But I still feel like it was still this other thing. But I've been like the hookup for these things. I'm like, I could find you an Irish dancer. I could find you a bagpiper.
You're pimping Irish dancers out. You're like, yeah, I can sort you. Come see me around the back.
They're like, Anne knows. Her last name's McNamee.
I went to New York for St. Patrick's Day, actually.
Oh, wow.
In 2014 or 15. And I was like prepared to go and be like, oh, this is going to be so lame. And I was totally hooked. I was like, but it's because we do the parades and stuff here on St. Patrick's Day, but they're quite low key and it's a bit sort of thrown together. But the New York St. Patrick's Day parade, like all your college bands playing like really amazing music and all, it's just like, it was on another level. So I was loving it. The fact that I'd been drinking Guinness from about, you know, 8 a.m. might have helped improve.
Probably helped.
Yeah, but it
you
was
were
brilliant.
Probably very popular too. As soon as you spoke? Were people excited?
They love it. Yeah, they love the hearing the Irish accent over there. Yep. And it was before I'd done any sort of stand-up comedy or whatever. Like, so this was my first gateway into, you know, and I play music and stuff as well. So we went into a bar that a friend of mine had moved over and was kind of managing. And we went into this bar and he was like, it was just off Times Square too. I can't remember what you call it. Was it Lanigan's or something? And he says, like, come in here. Don't worry. You know, I'll sort this out. And we came in and just had people around us. And I was busting out all sorts of tunes. And then I started making ones up and pretending they were Irish folk songs. I was just fucking making it up on the spot.
That's amazing. It's really great. Episode is going to come out around St. Patrick's Day. So this is really good. This is working out well. Yeah, so I'm sorry to talk so much about the U.S. and Irish stuff here. I want to start by asking about your Catholic childhood. That's usually where we start, is like your Catholic upbringing. I will give you the caveat that I know very little. I tried to research a bit, but I know very little. We know very little here about Northern Ireland in general. Mm-hmm. I think McNamee, I think we're from there. There's like a bread company there.
100%.
Called McNamee. So
when I saw your surname, one of my the uncle that isn't really your uncle.
Sure.
My uncle that wasn't really my uncle was called Sean McNamee. And, you know, his whole family were McNamee. So there's probably a link there. So that's as soon as I clocked the name, I was like, maybe, who knows, there could be a link.
It's exciting. There's very few of us here, so.
you even tried to take a nod to have a look at Northern Ireland. Just like the week that we've been you had this podcast lined up is nowhere near enough time for you to get your head around it. So just don't even go there.
Well, my family and I think we're working on planning a trip to Ireland this summer, my husband and my kids and I. So I got plenty of time to research. I don't know where I'd like to make it to Belfast. So we have not planned that far.
Give me a shout. Sure, I can help you out with that if you're looking at any tips.
That'd be great. I'd love to see you perform too.
Yeah, well, summer. Yeah, I'm about to go out on tour, but yeah, we'll sure get into that.
I'm sorry. I'm getting off track. Tell me about growing up Catholic for you, what that looked like.
Well, funny, you know, being a lapsed Catholic, the irony is that I literally, and this is no joke, the reason I'm kind of dressed, this is me kind of dressed up, is that I've just come from my niece's confirmation party.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, the sacraments of...
So you're fresh off a Catholic thing.
Oh, yeah, you can smell the incense off me, you know. This is... But you can tell I'm lapsed because I didn't go to the service, but I went for the dinner after. I know how to party, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Leave all the holy stuff.
That's
I don't want
part.
Any of that shit. I'll go to the dinner. So, yeah, that's literally where I've just come from. So that kind of gives you a snapshot of where I am with Catholicism in that I don't practice, haven't practiced it in years. But growing up, it was everywhere, you know. And I think to nod to the sort of Northern Ireland thing, I think that, you know, being from a part of Ireland, so say like if you cut it into four quarters, the northwest, you know, corner or northeast actually, is Northern Ireland. And you had the sort of Catholics versus Protestants troubles that were, you know, sort of very much down to religion. But that harks back to the 1600s when a Catholic, you know, king was, you know, defeated and whatever else. So that kind of set up here for being, for making Catholicism one of those things that it could literally have got you into a lot of trouble if people knew you were Catholic or vice versa, depending on, you know, where you were. So for me, kind of religion was one of those things that I think our family never really got madly into, but our older generations, like my granny and stuff, were like super devout. So you kind of went to mass or church every Sunday, really only because your parents were afraid to go to your granny's, you know, and have her say, well, what did the priest say this week at mass? And you had to try and repeat what was the homily about, what priest said mass. And so you were being grilled because these, like, sort of the hierarchy, the matriarchs were, like, seriously, that they were just trying to keep it alive. So that was the way it filtered. You had devout grannies and grandas who 100% were bought and sold, you know, on every element of Catholicism and religion and observed it to the nth degree. And then my parents then, on both sides, like my mom and dad, were Catholics, but, you know, we're not really, you know, a small C. And then me growing up saying that, I was never going to stay devout or get into it because I could just see that they didn't really fully buy into it. So by the time it came down to me, as soon as I was old enough to defy my parents and not go to mass, usually whenever I'd started drinking in my late teens and I was like, I'm too fucking hungover for this. I'm not going to mass. And that was when it ended for me.
It's a pretty Irish vibe for a young person. So did you go to Catholic school?
Yes. And that, again, another sort of hangover from maybe the Troubles. But yeah, all the schools here are segregated. Catholic schools and Protestant schools is just the way it is here. And like, I'm sort of, because I got a bit of a public platform, I do like to push for integrated education. But unfortunately, fortunately for me, but not for you know, other people, Catholic schools come out way on top in terms of you know, the grades and stuff like that. So, you know, whenever then you have a child and you're like, do we send them to the integrated school, which is kind of struggling to get on its feet, or do we send them to the Catholic school, which has a really good reputation of churning out, you know, and you know, star pupils? And you're like, oh, it's like, so that's, it was Catholic school all the way. So I've done everything. I've done all the sacraments, confession, communion, confirmation, the three C's, you know, and so that's us. We're yeah, I'm a fully qualified Catholic, but non-practicing for about 20 years now.
Yeah, kind of same. Do you remember your confirmation name?
I was literally just talking about this about less than an hour ago. So my confirmation name is Malachy, which is a bit of a weird name. It's Malachy. And like, it is, like, even here, people, and when my uncle was my sponsor, so you get brought up to the priest, and it's the whole ceremony, and everybody's going up in lines of, you know, and everybody's, you know, so you have people in front of you, what name does this child take? And the sponsor has to tell the priest, and it's all part of the, you know, the holy whatever, the sort of ceremony of it. And my uncle got up, and he was a bit of a stoner who was in a band in the 80s. And he was like, he lived in London for a while. He was a proper muso. And I loved him. Like, and I still, like, he's still like this to this day. And he kind of breezed over as my uncle was going to be my sponsor. And we got up to the top, and the priest says, and what name does this child take? And he didn't know. And he says, well, what's the name? And I said, Malachy. And he went, really? And the priest just... It's such a weird name for a kid to choose. It was just this look. And I was like, yes, Malachy. Fucking tell him. And he's like, Malachy. And I was like, oh, well, you know. So, yeah, I don't really tell too many people Malachy. And it came from football, soccer is massive here, you know, and around the UK, yeah, and all. And there was a Manchester United are my team and we're growing up. And there was a footballer from our area that actually went to school with my dad, and his name was Malachy Donaghy. So I took his name. So there you go.
I love that. Is that but it's a Saints name? It has to be, right? It has to be a Saints name.
I think there is. There is St. Malachy there. So there's a school from here. St. Malachy School from here, which actually went viral quite recently because one of their pupils went over to America and was playing like college basketball, and all his friends went over and made an absolute ruckus at the game in a good way. Like, they were chanting his name constantly, and the gate crashed the press conference after, and it went viral in America. And then I was like, I bet you that's St. Malachy's. Like, yeah, that's St. Malachy's, you know.
Oh, that's funny. I feel, you know, we had an episode a while back of where people called it and talked about their confirmation name and how they chose it. I just feel like you're really opening the gate. When you ask like a 13-year-old to come up with a new name for themselves, people, I feel like you're just asking to be trolled a little bit. Like, the stuff, the reasons people.
Yeah.
We had a overwhelming number of women around my age for some reason had Cecilia. And it was because of the song.
Cecilia.
Yeah.
You're breaking my heart. That one.
That convinced so many people. And I also don't understand why, like, women my age, because it was like an older song already at that point. I don't know.
Yeah, but Lotus Cecilia's. Well, here's literally right. So again, like, the timing of this couldn't be better. So this is our like family group chat. And this was, so when the ceremony was going down today, we were getting blow by blow updates.
I love it.
It's like, you know, live tweeting from
the
and my wife asked her what her name was, and if you see it there, she says it was Beatrice, right?
Oh, that's a good one.
So she chose the name Beatrice. But yeah, but it's like, why did you choose the name Beatrice? And everybody bust out laughing in the car, because my niece Fia said, why did you choose Beatrice? And says, there was a stray cat in our school called Beatrice, so she's named. Her mummy didn't even ask her. So now she is a fish. Her mummy didn't realize until after the ceremony. He's like, you're now named after a stray cat. So that's literally her name now. Beatrice, after a stray cat.
See, it has to be a Saint's name, but like, how you come to it.
It is great.
You're 13, it's, so, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, okay, so you grew up super Catholic, and then it was, I think that's when a lot of people start, I mean, I think, you know, Stephanie and I was similar, it's like, as we got older, we could sort of branch off from our parents a little bit. That's when you stop going to mass and it just sort of fizzles out.
How far did you, the both of you go? Maybe you're different degrees, but how far away from it are you? Are you like completely like agnostic, atheist, don't believe in any of it? Or is it like you kind of still take comfort in it, or do you still believe and go?
Yeah. I mean, this is something we grapple with a lot. I know Stephanie will still go to mass with family sometimes, but she is not religious at all herself and didn't baptize her child. I married a Protestant. We had a Catholic priest friend of the family who was willing to do a non-religious ceremony for her. I mean, he did a quick ceremony for us, so it made my grandmother happy. It kind of made everybody happy.
Yeah. Ticked a few boxes.
But it was not the full mass. I belong to a Methodist church now, but belong is a strong word because I rarely go. I'm mostly there for like the volunteer work they do and stuff. I don't know. It's interesting. But then my kids said they didn't want to go anymore. And I was like, my 9-year-old, when he was like 5, was like, I don't believe in this Jesus stuff. I don't think it's real. And I was like, well, I'm not going to tell you you're wrong. Because like, I'm kind of with you.
Yeah. How do you argue that?
Yeah, exactly. So I was like, yeah, I'm not going to make you go to church.
And you feel like you're kind of lying to your kids. You're trying to be respectful of them and you try and be as open about things. Yeah, like my daughter said brilliantly, like she just, a lot of my stand-up, you know, when you're a parent, you talk about it in stand-up, and my sketches actually on my TV show and online, the kids have started to feature in them just because of the things they come off with and they want to be in it. But one of the things she said to me was, she says, Dad, does God really exist? And she's like 5 and when she said it, and I was like, well, why do you not, why do you think he doesn't? She's like, because he never comes down. And it's just like, it was just as blunt as that, he never comes down. And it's like, yeah,
true. I mean, she's got a point.
And then she asked as well about, she asked about the news on TV. Again, the way her mind works is just, it's so funny. And she said, like, what happens to the, are you still there? Oh, have I lost you? I'm on my own now. I just kept going, just talking to myself for an hour and a half.
Oh.
Hello.
Okay, hello. I don't know what happened. I'm back.
You just dipped out. I kept going. I had a really good anecdote there, so you're going to have to.
Okay. This is happening. Okay, it's uploading the stuff we already did, so we should be good. We can just continue, and I'll be able to bridge the two because I'm editing. Okay, I'm sorry.
Okay, cool.
You were saying your daughter.
No, don't worry about it. So, yeah.
The news.
So she said about the news. She asked about the news, and she said, she said, Daddy, see the news? And I was like, yeah. And she went, like, who gets the pictures? And I was like, what do you mean? She says, like, when things happen, like you know when someone's being taken to jail and you see pictures and, like, I was thinking, oh, like the footage, the cameras, you know, at the court or seeing them go. Yeah, and I was like, well, who do you think gets it? And she's like, God? So she thought, like, this omnipotent God would film things and give the footage. And I was like, how do I explain, like, how this works? Because so I quizzed her a bit more about it, and that's genuinely what she thought. So she thought when you saw footage on TV of events and things like that, she didn't get the concept of journalism, you know, it's like, you know, or CCTV or whatever. She was like, God, is God just filming these things for us? And just like, so yeah, she's I don't think she's going to be a Catholic for much longer.
No. Well, that's, I don't know if you felt this way. You have 3 kids, is that right?
2 kids.
2.
They're 9 and 6.
Okay, that's similar. I have 9 and just turned 5. My younger one turned 5 yesterday. Mm-hmm. It was very exciting. Yeah, I don't know. I think you think about all these things and then you have kids and you're like, oh, they are truly like, they just have no idea. Like, they showed up, they have no idea what's happening. And I'm really shaping, you know, what I expose them to is like really shaping their thinking.
Yeah.
I mean, you and I, like, if we went to Catholic school, we were taught this A says A and 1 and 1 is 2 and Jesus was God. I mean, it's like all it's all mixed in where you're like, wait, which parts are provable? Like,
yeah. I know. And then you feel like, I know what you're saying about having, you have the responsibility, because the thing is as well, is that the one sort of good thing that I think does come from religion, and I don't think there's many good things, especially coming from a place where we had 30 years of you know, war between two people who have very similar religions, but they're different. So that was enough to, you know, perpetuate it. But yeah, one of the things I think is that some people kind of find the comfort blanket kind of thing of when you die, you know, they like to kind of believe in something that, you know, so I haven't specifically asked those questions yet, but I do kind of struggle with what am I going to say? Because you can give them that sort of existential dread at a very young age if you were just as blunt as to say, well, it looks like there's nothing, you know, like, whoa. And I think I got that quite early. Like, looking back on it, I think I kind of got to that point myself when I was about maybe 9 or 10, where I'd started to disbelieve quite a lot and then questioning a few things. And my parents weren't as blunt as to say that, but they kind of let me come to my own conclusions. And I remember just for years, like at night, like lying awake going, oh, there's nothing after this, you know, and having that feeling. It wasn't a strong enough feeling to make me go back to church, but it was enough to make me like lie awake at night.
Yeah. So do you identify like as an atheist now or agnostic, or where are you?
Yeah, I mean, I mean, when you get into those debates, then when people who are religious and want to put you on the spot and they try and put you in a box, are you agnostic, are you atheist? And it's like, I don't care what label you put on it, but I'm just not that. You know, I just don't believe in religion or whatever. Yeah. And I'm actually starting to get into that sort of conspiracy kind of thing. I'm not into conspiracies, but I do love this notion of what's it called? Is it like the simulation theory or whatever, that this is like almost like, and the reason I'm kind of getting into that is more to do with like actual physicists, you know, sort of putting forward experiments that go, we cannot. And again, then it kind of takes you almost full circle, because a lot of the things they can't explain, they go, well, this does point to some sort of creator that created what we're in, but they're not necessarily saying it's God, whatever. But there's so many of those kind of experiments and stuff. I mean, I have a few friends who are really, really smart, like, you know, professors, and, you know, they've got doctorates in physics and whatever else. And I would chat to them about these things every now and again, and like they'd be very much like going, yeah, this is kind of, you know, it's a field that's being explored. So to me, if my kids want to have a chat about that kind of shit that I say on TikTok, I'm all over it. But I just plead the fifth on anything in the Bible, you know.
I'm similar. I like the questions. I don't know that I you know, and I think that for my kids, part of it has just been like, well, I think I kind of cop out, because I'll be like, well, different people believe different things. Like,
yeah, you say that. Yeah, that's a kind of our answer as well.
Yeah, because then it could be like, well, what happens after you die? It's like, well, here's the Buddhists kind of think you come back as something, and so do the Hindus, and then Christians think you go to heaven. You know, like, I don't know. I'm just, some people think not, like you're giving them a buffet of options. I don't know if that's right either. But.
Yeah. Our kids do like a nativity every year, and obviously, you know, the religious element is huge in that. And whenever my daughter does it, there's a couple of kids in her year. It's not as racially diverse and religiously diverse here as it would be, you know, in some other parts. And there's a few kids who are like Muslim or whatever, and she came in like, why is Muhammad not in our nativity plans? Like, his name's a bit of a clue, you know. But you just, how do you explain these things to your kids?
Yeah, I know, it's hard, because a lot of it doesn't make sense. These are like big, why do different people believe different things? And there's like a historical reason why, and there's
It's too heavy of a conversation to be having over a bowl of Cheerios. You know.
So your wife was also raised Catholic?
She's and she's kind of on the same page as me. Her family would be a wee bit more religious, but you know, she was allowed to make her own mind up, and it was more, they would kind of blame me for it, but just kind of would identify more as atheist now. But over the first few years of us going out, I wasn't like, you know, trying to brainwash her or anything, but you know, she just kind of stopped going. And we're kind of at the stage where, you know, we because of the benefits of putting, of getting your kids baptized and going through the sacraments, that means they, because you can't go to a Catholic school unless you are, you know, baptized or whatever. I think there is a bit of a loophole now, because they do obviously have children that are from, you know, mixed different faith backgrounds. And but I'm not too sure what the sort of logistics of it are, but we just knew we have to get our kids baptized. So we did all that, you know, they've been baptized, they're doing all their sacraments and stuff like that. But again, it's that sort of thing of when, I don't know how much they really believe in it, or we don't really force it. But when they come home from school, you know, they do have conversations about things they're being taught about religion. And it's like, you want the benefits of them going through a Catholic school because of all the other stuff. But when it comes to the religious side of it, you kind of have to go, oh God, they're, you know, they're being sort of given this information too young and stuff. So yeah, it is, it's tough, like, but I think that it's just waiting until the right moment to answer those questions properly. But I can't even answer them for myself, so I don't know what I'm going to say to them. I'm just going to ad-lib it when it comes.
You know, sometimes, I don't know if your kids are like this, my nine-year-old will come up with his own, like, complex theories. Like, he has a thing where he was like, I don't believe in God, I believe in nature. And then he was talking about how he was, when I was a little kid, he was a spirit. So and I was like, you know what? It's as good as anything that I've heard, so why not?
It's as plausible as anybody else's. Yeah, my son did describe it one time because he learned how to create his own Roblox world. Yeah. And he was like, this must be what God felt like. It's like, so he's going down the same route as me. He's like, here, I have a theory about this. This is simulation theory.
Comes back to that. Maybe
we're all just
right.
In a really high definition Roblox, you know.
It's not implausible.
No.
So, okay. So I'm particularly interested in, so your comedy, you talk about lots of things in your comedy. I've tried to look at both at your show and at some clips of your stand-up. It's interesting because I feel like a lot of, when I'm thinking about Irish comedians, I'm like, well, they're Irish and like everyone around them is Catholic. But you're in, I don't know, in Northern Ireland, and I see you also travel. So is there thought, when you do talk about Catholicism or when it comes up in your comedy, is there thought about like, how it's going to be received by Catholics versus non-Catholics? Are there references you make that you're like, only some people are going to get this?
Yeah, I mean, that's when it comes to comedy, you do have to always tailor your set and what you're going to do. And you know, when you're making a certain type of joke, only certain type people are going to get it. Mm-hmm. So being from here, though, the Catholic Protestant thing was is such a big thing still. And more so in a way of ridicule. We ridicule it a bit more now because it was the older generations that put so much, you know, stock into it. And it obviously caused conflict and all that. So a lot of the younger generation of comedians, you know, sort of, I'm turning 40. So anybody from sort of like 50 down, take the piss out of it, you know, and that's just kind of the general vibe. But yeah, I don't tend to... For me, it's just part of who I am, who I was growing up, so that you do obviously make jokes about things that you know about and funny stories come from it. But one of the sort of biggest routines that I do that, you know, goes down well here, and I suppose I've done like the Edinburgh Fringe and I've gigged in, you know, London and stuff like that and all as well, is that it was about my actual granny on my dad's side, who was the most devout Catholic, like the most strictest Catholic going. She knew all the saints, every single saint, and who they were the patron saint of. Like you could say, like, you know, oh granny, I've got a driving test coming up, and she'd be like, Saint Ignatius, patron saint of driving tests. And then she's like, what are you struggling with? Parallel parking. Hold on a wee second. Saint Bartholomew, he's patron saint of parallel parking. She was like encyclopedic. And then the most mind-blowing thing happened when I was about 9 years old. She gave me a relic in a birthday card. So, you know, like, I don't know if you guys would have this tradition when you're giving a birthday card, like your granny would put a bit of money in it for you, you know, and that would be, she gave me a relic of, he's now Saint Pio, but he was called Padre Pio then because he hadn't gone through the clinical trials yet. Yeah.
The clinical trials.
Stage 3 clinical trials. So she gave me this relic and it blew my mind because she was like, it's a bit of his stigmatism, she said, which is your eyes, but she meant stigmata. So she meant stigmata, and that was, and when I researched what this was, turns out it's a scab from Padre Pio's hand. And I just was like, this is too much for me. I was like, I have to get a tetanus shot now. And I asked my mum, why is granny like this? Why is she so mad about religion? And then that's when she blew my mind and said, your granny used to be a Protestant until she met your granddad when she was in her 20s. And then she converted to being a Catholic. And that's like the opposite sides, the Protestants versus the Catholics. Yeah. And she had been a Protestant. And then she like, it's like the Super Bowl changing chains at halftime, you know, coming out and playing for the other side. So that was a huge thing for me, you know.
Wow. Yeah, that would be mind-blowing. It's funny because my paternal grandmother is also my one convert grandparent.
Mm.
I don't even know what she was before, but in the U.S. at that point, it was less of a big deal.
Yeah.
She married this Irish son of immigrants and converted to Catholicism. My sense is she was kind of like, yeah, whatever, why not? And then they went on to have 12 children in this little bungalow on the south side. I don't feel like she fully understood what she was signing up for, maybe.
Yeah, was she really Catholic it up there? Like she went full Catholic. She didn't realize it came with it.
Kids all had red hair. It was wild. But the commitment of your grandmother to like really just embody, because I feel like with my grandmother, there was a sense of like, yeah, she's not fully in. She's got one foot in kind of a thing. By the time I would came around. Yeah, no,
like she.
But that's like commitment.
My granny went method. My granny was like Marlon Brando method, you know. She did not break character. That was the thing, was she was the one we were most afraid of admitting that we hadn't been to mass to. So we had to go because she would grill us. And the worst thing happened was whenever the masses started to put up their own radio masts and you could listen in. So she could actually listen into the mass that we said we were at, and she'd have notes, and she would, so like that was the thing with her, was that was what, you know, that story is very, you know, it ticks a lot of boxes for people here because it's about, you know, Protestantism, Catholicism, and the whole convert thing.
Yeah.
And it's all real, you know, it's all true stories. But the thing was that what I found with my granny then was in later life, she actually, when she was, now she's dead now, about 10 years, towards the end, she was in hospital for quite a bit. And I used to call down and, you know, would sit and, you know, visit her as much as I could. And she started telling me all of the, now this woman would not have disrespected anything to do with the Catholic Church. And then in the last, and she knew she was kind of on the way out, she wasn't getting out of hospital and she was getting very frail. She started telling me the whole story about how she converted and the process of doing it. And I was interested, like, how did this fit, like, physically happen? How did you do it? And she had to go to an order of nuns called the Poor Clares. And she just said they were horrible. She said they asked me things. She said, now, again, she would never have mentioned anything. She wasn't like one of these cool grannies that would mention, you know, stuff is it racy every now and again.
Yeah.
None of that. And she was telling me, she says, they used to ask me, do you ever touch yourself and all thinking about your husband? Oh, how would you do it?
Oh,
like
my
weird, warped shit.
Oh my gosh.
Like, why were they doing this? She says, I had to go there every, you know, like regularly a few times a week. It was held in a room above a chapel, and these women would ask her all sorts of weird questions, which when you strip away the, you know, the habits that they're wearing and the fact that it's anywhere else in the world, you're like, that's warped.
Yeah. So,
and she kind of was telling me towards the end of her life. And she was kind of going like, you know, I don't know what's waiting for me on the other side and all blah, blah, blah. Whereas she'd been devout for so long. And I felt kind of bad. She had this sort of clarity towards the end where I think she realized that, you know, I don't know. And I don't want to put words in her mouth, but she was talking very openly and honestly about the almost like she was duped into their religion or she shouldn't have put so much into it. But I just thought that was weird that that's how they did it back in the day, and that the nuns were getting all sorts of, you know, pleasure, gratuitous shit. You know, and what about this? And would you ever think, like, and she just says it was horrible, but she had to do it. And they would say to her, if you don't come back to us, we'll not, you know, sign you off. I don't know what to do, you know.
Oh, my goodness.
So she kind of had to go through it. And that's what she used to say to us then when we were growing up. And that kind of put it into context. If she found out we hadn't been going to mass, she would say to us, you don't know how lucky you are to be born into this religion.
Oh my gosh.
You don't know. And she never said what she was talking about. And that now it all makes sense, you know.
Oh my gosh. Oh. We've had guests from all over on this podcast. So many people talk about their Catholic grandma from Thailand, from Ireland, you know, I had my Polish Catholic grandmother.
It's like up there, it's synonymous Catholic grandmother, mafia boss. You know, it's like, it's something, it's a character that everyone can identify with.
It's like this matriarch, I don't know, there's something there with a rosary. Yep.
Here's like, and I'm just literally throwing this out there. I was talking to my wife about this recently because I have, like, my brother's autistic and I've got nephews and nieces that have autism. And I was thinking, and maybe there is already research being done about this, but when you think about the older generations who were never assessed for autism and things like that, how much of the devout, massively observant Catholic, Christian, any kind of religion, is sort of undiagnosed autism, where that's their thing. She was obsessed. She knew all of the feast days that were coming up. She had to get to her midweek prayer yeah. group up in the mass. She had to do her rosary at this time of day. That routine and stuff that other people might, you know, put into Warhammer or, you know, Dungeons and Dragons or whatever, you know, or a certain, you know, building model things. How much of that is masked by being others? They're just devout. You know what I mean?
That's really interesting. Yeah, like a special interest. And there's so much there. There's so much to learn about and to memorize. And,
yeah, there is.
I mean, the saints, it's like a whole pantheon.
100%. Yeah, that's and I think that thing of, and the reason why we're saying it as well is because I was talking about how, you know, nowadays when people display certain types of behaviors, you go, you know, part of your head goes, I wonder are they on the spectrum, you know, or you might mm-hmm. then they say, oh, you know, I'm autistic, and you go, ah, that makes a lot of sense. And then when you think back to the older generations, like the way that your granny or grandad or whatever behaved, like my granny was obsessed with her Catholic statues, like Our Lady, Padre Pio, Jesus, you know, and she would have them and had to be sitting in a certain way and she would dust them. Nobody touched them. You're not allowed to touch them. Don't even look at them. You know, it was like, she was like, that had that kind of level of mania yeah. obsession with it, that you wonder, is that what was going on there? She wasn't spiritual. She was just on the spectrum, you know?
It could very well be. First of all, I really like that you had, because I feel like that's very Catholic. You're like Our Lady, Padre Pio. Oh yeah, Jesus. There's also Jesus. The Catholics kind of put him.
He hardly else. Gets a look in. Yeah, we're like niche. We're like hipsters. You know. Oh, you probably never heard of this guy. Jesus is so mainstream. You know, after the Old Testament, you know, Jesus just so mainstream.
I mean, something I think a fascination of mine. Maybe the reason I still go to a Protestant church now is because I just feel like I was fed the certain version of Christianity and I'm like interested in what it actually is, or like, we don't learn, I don't know, we didn't really learn the Bible. I'm like, what was it? Like, what did they take and kind of turn and say, okay, this is what the teaching is, you know? I don't know. Yeah. I'm sort of interested.
Well, that's where the Protestantism kind of came from, is that Catholics and, you know, Catholicism was kind of running away with the Bible, and it was, the power lay in the hands of the priests, and they were manipulating what was being said in the scripture to the point, and creating you know, creating, like, there, exactly what we were saying, saints after saints, different types of saints. And eventually, wasn't it Martin Luther was just like, there's too much of this shit going on, and there were, you know, the money changing hands. It was like, yeah. Take it back to the you know, the basics, and, you know, strip away all this shit. Catholics were very bling about the whole thing. They were like, you know, sort of, they were all bells and whistles. So yeah, I get that, and I feel like whenever you look back on it, maybe that's why I find you hear a lot more people having a lot of fun with how they were raised Catholic, because there were so many quirks and so much mad shit that yeah. went on in it, and so many mad things that were taught to so many people across the world, that you all kind of get out of it. And it's like, it's a bit like going into like a really crazy nightclub, and then you talk to people while you're, were you ever in something? So I say, do you remember the guy in the toilet? Do you remember, what was that girl doing on the ceiling? Did you ever remember that? And you can't believe that so many people across the world have had this same very niche experience, you know?
That's really, and that's the part I like. You're right. That is, because I do kind of do like the bells and whistles. I like all the characters, and I like the, I mean, it's the aesthetically, like, you go into some of these old cathedrals, like, it's, you know, I'm here for the, yeah, the smells and the music.
Yeah, and the incense and stuff. It's very much, as far as religions go, it's very much the Marvel Cinematic Universe of religions. There's crossovers and all, you know, like, you're like, oh my God, that was his granddad. Oh yeah, that makes sense now, yeah. They are like the Avengers, you know.
Yeah, it's true. It's all, yeah. It's Stephanie and I started, and I think on our first episode we said, you know, Catholicism's like my little brother. Like, I can make fun of it, but like, if someone from outside of it is making fun, suddenly I'm defensive. Like, and then I'm like, hang on, I'm being defensive of the Catholic Church right now? Really? Is this who I am? Like, I don't, I'm sorry, I lost myself a second. Well, this just came up. Here's one. Did you go to Mass for St. Blaise's feast day? Every year.
No. What was that?
There, we did a blessing of the throats every year. This just came up. And it is a crutch. Oh, so Stephanie did not go to Catholic elementary school until eighth grade, which is, and that's like the end. She like transferred the halfway through her eighth grade year. It sounded horrible. And then she went to a Catholic high school, because here we go to a new school for ninth. So she didn't know what I was talking about. But across the U.S., on the feast day in early February, you walk down the aisle, you go to Mass, but then there's an extra part where you walk down and they take two candles and they cross them like they're strangling you, basically, with the two candles and they bless your throat. Because St. Blaise, because St. Blaise saved a child. He said a blessing on a child who was choking on a fishbone and the child didn't choke. And so that's what the... I just had a moment where what I realized is that I am terrified of my children choking on bones. And my husband was like, "What's the deal?" And I was like, oh.
Where did this come from? Yeah, now
I was
know.
Traumatized with the story of a child.
I missed that episode. Yeah, I definitely missed that episode of Catholics do crazy shit. That it's like, you know, St. Blaise, the Heimlich maneuver, whatever.
That's what I'm saying.
That's crazy. But yeah, so the Americans have really honed in on that particular, is that like a quite a common American thing? Because I don't think I've never heard of it, and I've never heard of that ceremony, but we do other crazy ones.
So I talked to people from across the U.S. who grew up Catholic and did go to, but it was like, if you went to Catholic school, St. Blaise, can you think of other things? Like, were there certain saints that loomed large or like big?
Yeah, Padre Pio was a big one. He was like, we were kind of rooting for him. And then we had the Pope came to Ireland in the late 80s, whenever I was quite young, or maybe early 80s, but you know, that was a huge thing. So there was a lot of kids named John Paul in Ireland because he came, and everyone went, "I'm naming my child after you." So there's a lot of that going on. But I'm trying to think, like, so the sacraments were obviously really big, the confession, holy confession, communion, and confirmation. So we do the whole, the girls wear the big white dresses and, you know, look like, it's very much wedding dresses.
Yeah.
And like, people have a cheek from here, particularly Catholics, to scoff at other religions. And look, when they all get dressed up, like, yeah, do you remember when you made your daughter marry Jesus when she was seven? Because that's what you're doing, you know. Like, oh yeah, actually, I do remember
it
that.
Is bizarre.
Yeah,
and nobody questions it. Yeah. We were just excited for the dress. I know when I did it.
We did. We have a thing as well. There is a site in Ireland down bottom southwest, called Mount Mellery, and there's another place then in France is very famous, Lourdes. So these are like holy sites where, you know, you have like a, usually like some sort of apparition happened at some point, you know, back before they had camera phones and could call bullshit on things. So like, and that became, you know, Fatima or Lady of Fatima, Lourdes. And my granny would, you know, I don't know if she ever went to Lourdes or Fatima, but basically Mellery in Ireland was basically a smaller scale version. It's like, instead of going to Universal, you went to Coney Island or something like that. I don't know if that's a good analogy. You've got, you know, top level, and then we have our own version, you know. So basically I used to go with my granny down to Mellery. It was a sort of a full 12-hour bus ride, which is huge deal in Ireland, to drive for that long on any kind of vehicle. It's like,
that is a long time.
It was a long drive. But every few months she would go down, and one of our cousins would be lucky or unlucky enough, depending on how much you were into it. When you were a kid, you loved it. The older you got, you didn't want to do it. And she would go down to Lourdes, and on the way to, it was so weird. Like, I've talked about, me and my sister talk about this show. She's got a better memory of a lot of it than I do. So you go down, and they'll be praying on the way down and doing like rosary. And, you know, you're just a kid, you just want to play about, but they're like doing, and it ends up like chanting, you know, and it's like, and then you go down to it, and then you sit up all night. You go down to this grotto, and it's at the bottom of a wee valley, and you look up, and in the middle of like this steep kind of almost cliff face, there's a statue of Our Lady. And then you would sit and stare at it all night while praying, and you would drink the water out of the stream, this, you know, lovely, you know, clear, crystal clear water. And people would say, you'd spend all night there, and then you get on the bus in the morning, having driven 12 hours down, having spent overnight praying and chanting, drinking this water out of a stream, then you get back on the bus in the morning and drive home. And then on the way home, everybody would tell the stories with a wee microphone at the front of the bus of what they saw. And inevitably people would come up and say, I saw my son who, you know, was killed and blah, 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 and I saw blah, blah. Mm. And then one time I got handed the microphone. I didn't ask for the microphone, and I was about maybe 7. And I got up and I told how, as I was looking at the statue, I saw my dead granda, and he was like dressed, and I explained what he was dressed like, this black thing and a ruffled there, and said, was your granda a good singer? And I was like, yeah. He's like, he's in the choir in heaven. That's where I was told that your granda appeared to you, because he is now in the choir in heaven. And he's like, thanks for sharing your story, Patrick. Everybody clapped my down. And my sister was like, did you see that? I mean, no, fucking didn't. I just made something up. I was like, I had to say something. I was just fucking vibing there. It was improv, you know. So but there was a woman who took it, who took the thing, and she'd talk about the miracle of the sun. And apparently one time when they were on their way down, the sun came out of the sky and circled the bus multiple times, and everybody said, don't look at it, don't look at the sun, don't look at the sun. But she did. She looked at the sun, and that's how, you know, she got, I think that nowadays we would call it glaucoma, but back then it was the miracle of the sun. So that was...
Oh, wow. Yeah. That is really...
intense. Like,
As an adult, I wouldn't want to bring a kid on that, because it sounds like, I don't know, they'd just be cranky. You'd need to go to the bathroom. You need to eat. I mean, you're up.
It was insane. And do you know what they actually worked out recently? Is that I'm gonna have to get the article for it. I'm almost 100% sure there was a news story about this. They basically have found out that the water down there isn't safe to drink, and it could be laced with hallucinogenics that come from the weeds that are. So that's why people were saying shit. That's why people were saying the miracle of the sun and dead relatives, because they're fucking tripping.
That's amazing. Mm. See, I love stuff like that. I like looking back at Catholicism and being like, why did people find that useful? Mm. You know, like, I think the rosary beads, it's like, well, yeah, like, we know that, like, repetitive.
Yeah.
We know that that's actually good for your nervous system. You know, like, repetitive motion and saying the same words over and over.
Fidget spinners. Like, when you see fidget spinners, yeah. You see, you know, like,
that's... the original fidget
spinner. I did a thing years ago where I got a fidget spinner. And I know St. Bridget's Cross. Do you ever see that? St. Bridget's Cross. The reeds.
Yes.
And I got a St. Bridget's Cross. St. Bridget's spinner, I did one. Yeah, so it was a St. Bridget's thing. Yes, and then the St. Bridget's Cross and St. Bridget's Happy. Yes, that was another one that I'd done as well that you guys had.
Yes, yeah. That was the one I shared. Yeah.
But no, I know what you mean. That there was a great documentary years ago now, probably nearly 20 years ago. And I remember that the BBC journalist, Jeremy Bowen, and he did this thing where he was coming at it. He was very much religious, not necessarily Catholic, but Christian. And he went through the Bible and looked at a lot of the different sort of miracles and occurrences in the Bible, which could be tracked to actual physical, geological and whatever kind of events.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of stuff from the story of Moses crossing the Red Sea and stuff about how, you know, if a tidal wave happens and the water retreats, it can look like Moses made the Red Sea, you know, part, because it actually retreated and that would coincide with the pillar of fire and stone, fire by night, stone by day. It's basically an eruption. So a volcanic eruption, which was then tracked, and they looked into all this and they saw that, oh yes, there's a layer of volcanic ash around the time that this story was meant to have happened. So it's things like that that were then sort of spun into... you know, in the religion and moving into religion. I'd be interested in the reality of it, you know, however much of it is real. But like those wee tidbits, I do actually like sort of drilling into.
Yeah, same. Yeah, I don't know. I find that stuff interesting. Oh man, we're like almost at an hour. I didn't even get to all the things I wanted to ask you.
No, keep going. I'm in no rush if you want. I'm no mad rush. So
one of the big things I wanted to ask is, I was curious what kind of pushback you get from, whether it's your character, I know you have a priest character that you do, or some of your comedy. Mm. I mean, are there people who are like, this is disrespectful to the church? Do you get those kinds of reactions at all?
Yeah, funny. I was thinking about that. I was going to mention it earlier, is that I think because of how ludicrous it is, you don't get as much pushback as you would get from some of the more moderate religions. If you'd left a more moderate religion, or, you know, sort of different type, and you were pointing back and having a, you know, go at it, I think they would be a bit more, what the hell are you doing? But I think that people within the Catholic Church kind of understand this is a wee bit, this is a bit screwball. Like, so they don't really have a leg to stand on. But yeah, funny, I so in my Not particularly in the stand-up, but in the TV show that I did here, the sketch show, I did a character which started online, and it came from my daughter or my son having one of those wee sort of Bluetooth microphones, you know, that puts a lot of echo onto what you're, you know, it makes it sound really epic. Uh-huh. And it sounded like exactly like the speakers at a big, massive, every year it's called the Novena. And it's a series of like a week long of masses in a big, big cathedral in Belfast. And it's basically like the World Cup for Catholics every year. It's Novena time. They get flags out and everything. It's like crazy. But there's that many people that most people can't get into the church and you have to sit outside. So every year, and it was always really good weather. Obviously some kind of connection to God there. I do believe in that. That every year it was really good weather and hundreds of people would be sitting outside, and these speakers, when the priest spoke on the speakers, it sounded exactly like this Bluetooth, the exact same amount of echo and the exact same. So as soon as I spoke into it, I was just like to my wife, I was like, this sounds like you're at the Novena. So I just started doing these videos online just of me kind of ad-libbing as if you're at a Novena. And then I was doing it and there was a bit of music on the radio behind me, and I turned it up and I started singing a religious song over the beat that was on the radio. It was like it was a dance tune, like a Euro dance tune, and people loved it. They were like, "Oh my god, you got to do like a full album of like Catholic songs over a disco beat." So that's what I started doing. Was as that character, I would just take Catholic hymns and put a dance beat under it and kind of like just sort of like make remixes. And it became really, really popular to the point where when I got the TV show, I started doing it on the TV show. And it wasn't until I did the TV show that you started to see a few people do this thing of saying, oh no, this is disrespectful, you know, to your Catholic faith. And I hate people go, would you say that about a Muslim? Would you take the piss out of the Muslim religion? Like, no, because it wasn't fucking brought up as a Muslim, you know, because that would be very much me just taking the piss out of it for the sake of taking the piss out of it. I came through the ranks, and this is the only one I'm allowed to. Do you know what I mean?
Right, exactly.
It's like, I hate that logic.
I earned this.
Yeah.
You know, I was confirmed. I get to make fun of it now. That's the rule.
So basically, yeah, I got pushed back then once it went on to TV. But what I started to do then, by the time it got to TV, I had seen a bit of it on social media of these comments. And, you know, I don't even bother replying. But by the time I got the TV, what I did was, the whole point was that it was a priest who was being very modern, and he tries to use all modern technology to reach his parishioners. So he was always doing live stream masses. So I would have comments going up the side that I'd scripted, and I always made sure I scripted the hatred into the comments. And there was always one person called Eileen who was like really pious and always, you know, taking it. This is disgraceful. And people were telling her to fuck off in the comments. So I made sure I kind of got that all out of the way by putting that on screen. And whenever it was going out on TV, a lot of the people were like, I just watched the comments going up the side, you know. So yeah, you do get it. But
yeah,
I feel like the only time somebody said something in real life, I just went, oh my God, I did a charity gig in Belfast in a big building, and I was kind of hosting and doing the charities, doing a stand-up set as well. And I did a stand-up set, and at the end of it, I do this bit about the about going up for communion and not knowing what to do because I hadn't been in so long, and I had to do all the hand movements, and you do that and I said it looked like the Macarena. I don't know if you're familiar with the dance tune.
Oh, I'm familiar. Yes.
So I would stick on the Macarena, go so it always kills it. Went down really well, and then I was coming like walking about talking to people after, and this guy came up and shook my hand really, really like intently, and was like, you've turned your back on your Catholic faith, how dare you, kind of thing.
Oh.
I was like, I'm not a Catholic, you know. I might have been, but I'm not anymore. I didn't turn my back on shit, you know. That's not my religion. That's it. How dare you turn your back on your Catholic faith? I was like, it wasn't mine. It was fucking forced on me.
Yeah. Wow. Was he older, or was he, was he older?
Do you know, that was what the funny thing was. He wasn't as old as you'd think that somebody saying something like that would be. I was just, sorry, I had to get it up for you there just to show you the example. So what I ended up doing was, so in series one, he was a raving priest. And by the time we got to the end of the series, he had his own music festival. And are you familiar with the song Sweetheart of Jesus?
Oh, I don't think so.
Sweetheart of Jesus, font of love and mercy, today we come.
Okay, I don't think that's one of the big hits here.
Wasn't big in America.
I think it's one of the ones they don't, you know, it's not one of the regulars. Maybe you hear it once or twice a year.
Yeah, yeah. It's. I think it was a B-side. It was probably like a B-side, you know, it was like... it's like we're hipsters over here. We know all the back catalog. But basically, yeah. this was what got me into the most trouble was I then started. They didn't mind the dance versions, but whenever you started doing metal versions, because I play a lot of metal. I used to be in a band, in a rock band, and so we got together and did a metal version of "Sweetheart of Jesus." And this was I'll not play it all, like, but this is just the vibe.
Oh, we need to link to.
I'm going to say, it's a banger, like, it's an absolute banger.
It is. People can't see, but this is like, you've got a full band on stage. It's really...
Yeah.
You know what it sounds like? There was like a moment of, I know it's not ska, but there was like, when I was younger in high school, I'd say, there was like a moment of Christian ska was really having a moment. Yeah, my husband... My husband grew up, that was like his way to be able to go to concerts as a high schooler. He was Protestant, but he would be like, well, it's a Christian band though. It's a Christian, you know? And it was like, that's what that reminds me of. Cause you're like, this is really good. And you're like, oh, they're talking about Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah. Then you realize you go, oh shit. Okay. Well, but so that was what got, I think it was more the satanic treatment of some of the lyrics, because the guys actually in the video for it are the fellas I used to be in the band with. So whenever we finished with the band and I started doing stand-up, I always said at the earliest possible opportunity we're going to get the band back together for something comedy wise and we ended up doing like Catholic, I don't think any of them thought we would end up doing Catholic hymns in a metal style.
But that would kill. I mean, my brother is a musician and plays a lot where we grew up. And I'm just realizing, like, if they just covered, if one of his bands just covered some of the bangers, some of the, you know, the hits, the Catholic hits.
Yeah, the big hits.
I feel like people would love it.
Yeah, there's definitely a market for it. Like, people do keep messaging me, please do a live version. We would all come to this. And, you know, I think that's where it would kind of be a bit weird because, you know, I would be like, how much of this are people getting spiritually? How many people are coming here because they want versus me just like taking right. the piss out of it?
You accidentally become like a Catholic sensation. Just got like all the really devout Catholics coming. That's
yeah. How do I tell them? Yeah, they don't realize that. But hey, look, if it pays,
you know? Catholic money, doesn't matter. It's all the same. Oh, that's funny. Yeah, well, what I like about that, like you're talking about it, referencing the novena, I think what people like is when it's a reference to something really specific for them, you know?
Yeah.
That was when I was watching a lot of your comedy. That's the thing. So a lot of it, I was like, oh, yeah, totally. And then some things I was like, nope, this is too Irish for me. I don't know what he's talking about. But, you know, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, no, totally. You kind of have to, you have to play to your audiences. And that's the thing with, you know, it's this sort of weird imbalance when you think about American comedy versus, you know, when, like where I'm from here in Ireland and different parts, is that you get a lot of people here be like, you know, ones that watch, consume like all types of American comics and, you know, Seinfeld and, you know, Curb Your Enthusiasm, and like they'll watch everything. And then they'll go to local comedy clubs and they'll be like, oh, a lot of their jokes are just to do with, you know, things to do with Northern Ireland or Catholics versus Protestants. And it's like, yes, we kind of have to make the people laugh in our local area first. And then yeah. when you kind of rise up, you can start to get an audience and branch out. And what they don't understand is that we tap into a lot of American culture because we've grown up with it in movies and in, you know, TV and music.
Yeah.
So we get most of the references. So they're still doing local stuff. They're doing stuff about America, but we can tap into that. And it's just like, but when right. we do it here, it just isolates so many people because, you know, so you do have to pick and choose. I know what is funny when you think of how an outsider looks in, you would just be looking at some of the stuff going, I have no idea why this is, like, you know, viral, but these guys must know what he's talking about. And that's
why,
you know, it's Catholic stuff is like, you know, is like, it's kind of, it's a key to else, you know, people beyond here in a certain way. Having said that, if I was to see the blessing of the throats or whatever that was, I'd be like, is this made up? Is this, did AI make this video?
Right. Yeah, you wouldn't. That's when I was living in India in my 20s for a little while. And I went to I don't do comedy. I do some live storytelling now. Mm-hmm. And I have a story about going to mass in India. Because I don't know. I was just like, what is it the same? Like, I know there's, you know, that's the wild thing about Catholicism. It's everywhere. Mm-hmm. And it was mostly the same. It was all the same moves, except when it was communion time, people don't wait in line there. They just kind of go in a group. So people just started like shoving toward the front, and it made me so anxious. And then I looked around and realized like I'm the only anxious one. Like everyone, like there's enough communion for everyone. There's no chance of me, like my little American self was like, oh God, who's first and who's second? And is this person cutting? And it just really, it made me realize how American I was in that moment. But yeah, then there is stuff where you're like, oh, everyone can relate to this thing, you know, stuff about mass or I don't know, does this. That's the fun part is when you meet another Catholic and suddenly you're vibing and you're like, what was your confirmation name? And you've got this thing in common.
Yeah. Yeah. And it can be quite sort of, it can be sort of a bit, you know, feel like you're excluding other people because you realize when you meet somebody that has gone through that stuff and then you look at these other people and they're like, any chance you're talking about something that's normal that doesn't sound like a cult? You know?
Yeah. We didn't grow up around nuns. We have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah.
My husband, early on, I took him to, I guess early on to us moving to Chicago, and he's from the south of the U.S., mm-hmm. so really pretty different culture. We went to a funeral for my best friend's father, who had been he was the drummer in a bagpipe band, so there was, I mean, it was just like kind of culture shock for my husband, mm-hmm. I think in a lot of ways, and he'd never, you know, full Catholic mass. It was the mass combined with the Chicago accent, he was like, what was happening? Because someone did a reading, and then this guy said, the word of the Lord. And everyone said, thanks be to God.
Thanks be to God.
In this real Chicago way. Thanks be to God. And my husband looked around, like he was like whispered to me, like, what just happened? I'll explain later.
That's so good. And they all know exactly when, like, they do it. Same intonation, same delivery, just this big chant. Oh my God. Yeah, so that was your dad played in the pipe band, did you say?
My best friend's dad did, yeah. So, yeah, yeah. But I.
Oh, your best friend's dad. Because when we went to, then we went to the New York for St. Patrick's Day, and the big pipe bands were, you know, a huge thing. We don't have too many of them over here, but I think it's that sort of, you know, Catholic, Irish, let's, you know, keep this tradition alive. So there was mm-hmm. a lot of that coming through, and there was a lot of obviously more contemporary bands and like playing the, you know, Michael Jackson medleys and things like that. And then you would get a traditional Irish one that would be doing all the Irish stuff.
Yeah.
And at one point we were standing, we had this really nice spot where we're close to a bar, we're at an intersection where really impressive how the whole thing flowed, and they would stop every now and again and they would let traffic go and then open up the, you know, street again, and the procession would continue. So this was happening, and where we were stopped then, when they stopped the traffic, there would be bands would kind of march on the spot and waiting to kind of move on, and they wouldn't really play much music, they would just wait. And the drunker I got, I was like, I started, you know, sort of vibing with what they were, you know, the beat that they were playing, and like, and the best one was, there was a band that stopped in front of us, and I think people around us realized we were from Ireland, so we were getting away with a lot, you know, a lot of behavior,
I'm sure,
was falling under, hey, they're Irish, just let them do it, you know. A lot of arrestable
just
offenses.
How they are.
There was like, yeah, like, hey, it's their day, give it to them, you know. And so this band had stopped, and the big massive drum on it, and it said that their banner said Saint Anne's of Hampton's Pipes and Drums. That was the name of their band.
Okay.
And but there's what is called a rebel tune here, rebel songs, Irish rebel songs, which are all, you know, Irish rebel songs against the English and all this. And mm-hmm. there's a rebel song that is called The Men Behind the Wires, quite famous. And it says, it goes, armored cars and tanks and guns ones came to take away our sons, but every man must stand behind the men behind the wire. And so this band was playing, and out of nowhere, like, I just sank another Guinness, and I started, they were doing that with me. I went, St. Anne's of Hampton's pipes and drums came to take away. And they were like, oh my God, they've got a song. Because it like rang perfectly. And they were like, oh my God, this is great. They started playing along with it. And then I look back on it. I was like, yeah, do you remember how I duped everybody into thinking that they had their own song back in Ireland? They were like, oh,
they had their own song.
High five me getting selfies and all. I had just done a parody of a rebel tune.
That's amazing.
Can't wait to get back.
I bet the band really appreciated that. Yeah, they're like, oh, look.
No, it was good crack. Yeah, we loved it. They loved it. Everybody had a good time. We all just, they thought they got their own bespoke song.
Oh man, yeah. Well, I'm gearing up for that right now. We have a local, the town right next to ours has a St. Patrick's Day parade, and I think we're gonna take the kids this year. See what happens.
Do they get off school for St. Patrick's Day? Is it a public holiday in American schools?
No.
Oh, really?
No. It's a lot of the teachers dyeing things green before the kids get there and telling them a leprechaun did something to their classroom. It's fascinating. And I feel like I grew up super Irish Catholic, so I actually didn't know that any, you know, I guess you grow up in this context and then you go out into the world going to college or whatever and you're like, oh, not everyone grew up in this way,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So I kind of went through the opposite. Like, people don't know what I'm talking about when I talk about the Irish Catholic stuff. But it's like, oh, no, everybody, mm-hmm. everybody does stuff for St. Patrick's Day. And I'm like, really? But it's like in this weird warp, like similar to what they do for Valentine's Day, where it's like not about Saint Valentine, it's like its own thing. That's sort of what has happened, not to the same degree.
So, but I'm fascinated by the leprechaun thing. It's kind of like, it seems like the leprechaun thing is a bit like Elf on a Shelf, this mischievous kind of wee thing.
Yes.
So it's like, yeah, it's
and
along those lines.
I mean, I don't remember growing up with the leprechaun stuff, because I think I went to Catholic school, so like we can talk about St. Patrick. Mm-hmm. Not that I learned that much about him.
Yeah.
I did an episode last year where I learned that he turned into a deer. Did you know that? There's a story of him turning into a deer.
No. Fair play to him. Didn't know.
Yeah. Look it up. to defeat, you know, the Celts. He doesn't. I mean, he sounds like a little bit of not the greatest guy. Sounds yeah. like he may have killed a lot of people.
Yeah, whenever you read up on the actual sort of historical stuff, you kind of go, ooh, they definitely cherry-picked a lot of the best bits. Because I, obviously, yeah. like, my name's Patrick and my dad's Patrick and his dad, you know, so it's like it's a very Irish thing. And
yeah.
St. Patrick, I always kind of feel, even to this day, like St. Paddy's is kind of my day. It's, you know, it's kind of all about me, you know, but like...
If you're Irish and... Patrick, that is your dad.
And then that notion of him being a real person, and then when you start to get older and you look into it and you realize, like, you know, driving the snakes out of Ireland was more of a metaphor for, you know pagans and all this shit. And then I was asking my daughter literally a couple of nights ago, saying about St. Patrick's Day is coming up soon, and they're talking about her plans. And then I would do like a quiz with my daughter, like every night when I'm putting her to bed. I give her like five questions, and
oh, I like that.
To do with, you know, our summer holidays from last year, or what you got for Christmas, you know. And we do these five questions. And I says, I'll do five questions about St. Patrick's Day. And I give her five questions about St. Patrick. And I wish this was what St. Patrick actually was. Because I said, what did he drive out of Ireland? And she said, the snails. So he drove the snails out of Ireland, not the snakes. Took a long time. And what was the other thing she said? I says, what is it that you were on St. Patrick's Day? There's a certain kind of thing. It's like you grows in the ground, you put it on. She was like, pineapples? Like, okay. So he's driven the snails out. You were pineapples. I can't remember what the other thing was, but she had some brilliant answers and just totally not getting it. But yeah, the St. Patrick kind of lore doesn't really match up to the realities, it sounds like.
Do kids get the day off of school there?
Yes, I think we get more than just a day. I'm actually looking up calendar now in front of me. It definitely is a public holiday. And then I think depending on sort of where it falls, they may take a couple of days off school. But they definitely get the day off school. And we would normally head away. So we're in Belfast, which is, you know, sort of I think it is the second biggest city in Ireland. Not that there's that many, and they're not that huge even at that. But then we would go up the coast to Donegal, and that's proper rural Ireland. You know, you feel like you're going back in time. And that's the charm of going up there. And they have like a wee St. Patrick's Day parade, and it's always very quaint, but always really funny. They always have like a really good sense of humor about the St. Patrick's Day parades. And we would go up there, and then... That's sort of, we kind of tend to do it that way. It keeps it low key for the kids, because if you go to somewhere like Dublin on St. Patrick's Day, it's just wall to wall, like it's mad. And it's funny, the one time we did go to it, we went down, and there was a whole load of us in like a bar, and the girls that we're with had to go and get ready for the night out. They were only out kind of like, they weren't dressed up. And whenever they left, then we were all, me and a few of the fellas were left, and I'm quite good at art. And I drew, so there was a bunch of girls from America, and they were like, they're wearing white t-shirts, and they were getting people to sign their t-shirts. And they were like, oh my God, your name's Patty, and you're, oh my, we got a real one. Like a live one.
Struck the jackpot.
Of course, I'm like, this is my day, you know. I was like, and they're like, oh, you gotta sign our shirts. And I says, I'll go one better, I'll do a Celtic design, and I could do this thing, it's called it's a Celtic knot.
Oh yeah.
But I did it in sort of a 3D way, and I could sketch it really quickly. I don't know, I haven't done it in years. Celtic knot, and it looked class. They're like, oh my God. And they're like, we got it. So they all wanted to get a Celtic knot, and I was like, I'll do it for a pint each time. I'll do it for one pint. So each time I did it, I was sinking a pint. It became this thing. I was like, yeah. So they gradually became less and less of a Celtic knot as it went along. Oh, no. We're cut off again. Maybe we didn't.
Okay. That's not going to happen again.
When the nuclear bomb dropped, like, everybody just scattered. And, yeah, that was it. Sorry, you missed a bit of that up to the nuclear bomb. But so we dropped off. Anyway, the Celtic knots became a bit more abstract as we went along.
And I imagine.
There was that many of them. There was like about 20 of the girls. And I remember doing like one, and I looked around, and my wife came in, was like, what's going on here? The evidence was all around me, you know.
I'm just writing on these women. They probably all were girls from my high school that would track.
Can't remember where they were from.
Wow. Yeah. So yeah, to quickly answer your question, I think the leprechaun thing is a non-religious way for the teachers here to celebrate St. Patrick's Day in some way. And I think some of them probably have no idea why we're doing St. Patrick's Day, but there's like a weird, I don't know. It's cold in Chicago. I think they're looking for things to do, you know, they're looking for fun stuff because everyone's kind of tired of the cold.
Yeah. That's nice. So I like that. That idea. And I don't mention this to my kids because they will want that. They will want, you know, the full leprechaun experience.
Well, that's the thing. It is like Elf on the Shelf. My kids said they did come home and say, oh, well, you know, Lucy said that when she wakes up on St. Patrick's Day, everything is green. The toilet water is green. Her breakfast has been dyed green. And I said, that's really great for Lucy. That sounds like fun. Maybe you can go to Lucy's house sometime.
Yeah, go to Lucy's. Oh, no. Yeah, our kids would want
leprechaun
all
doesn't do that here.
Yeah, we don't really do much of that, like, you know, dyeing things green, you know. You do see that going on, you know, like I saw somebody put up like green sausages and stuff. It's very American or whatever, but we just drink Guinness all day and then dye the toilets black the next day because Guinness is not a good
day
one.
Of Guinness. Yeah we'll be doing, there'll be some Guinness around, probably some soda bread, and we do people are really into corned beef and cabbage here, which is I think an American Irish thing.
Oh yeah, that's the kind of like the national dish. Yeah, kind of old school. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's nice. That's what'll be served up around here, I'm sure, on that day. All right. Well, I am gonna let you go now. But Patty, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. We really appreciate it.
No problem. I'll send you through some of the links then to some of the Father Pat remixes.
I would love it. We will definitely repost all of that. And I will add some links in the show notes of this episode as well. Thank you so much. Oh, I need to end this the way we end all of our episodes. Patty, and also with you.
And also with you.
Thank you.
And with your spirit. And with your spirit. Is that
Okay, so you can hear there, I cut our recording like half a second too soon, because as you can hear, we did the And Also With You, and then Patty came in. He came in with the And With Your Spirit. So clearly someone has been to Mass recently, and it is not me. So as much as he just claimed to be a non-Mass goer, apparently he knows the new moves. So we, even after recording, had a good laugh about the And Also With You and With Your Spirit stuff. You know, the entire globe, I think it took us all by storm when that happened. All the lapsed Catholics are totally thrown off guard. So I hope you enjoyed our conversation. The other thing that we did not get to in the interview that I wanted to make sure to highlight is the special collection. Patty noted to me that he cares for his sister who has special needs, and so he suggested the cedarfoundation.org. I am going to link that in our show notes, and you can go check them out and donate if you feel so moved. Seems like a great organization. Thanks for listening. I hope you have an excellent St. Patrick's Day, however you do or do not celebrate. And, you know, as always, and also with you.